Fantastic. All right. Well, welcome, everybody. Welcome to our May call. Next month at this time, we'll be doing the call from the Omni Shoreham. There are 1,410 people already registered for the June conference. We already have 217 meetings scheduled, 74 of which are face-to-face. What's going to be happening in just a moment is that I'm going to turn the call over to Flannery Winchester, one of my colleagues. I am near Yosemite with a little bit sketchy internet coverage, so Flannery will actually be interviewing Mr. Corbello in just a moment. But I also want to welcome the new chapters that came on since last month's call. So that includes Ocala, Florida, Northeast Iowa, Iowa, Danville, Kentucky, Central Massachusetts, Salisbury College in Maryland, Marietta in Ohio. The international chapters include Fenner, Australia, Creston, Canada, Niger Delta in Nigeria, and Auckland, New Zealand. And New Zealand's a new country, so welcome particularly New Zealand. So we are so happy to have Representative Corbello on the call. He's been a hero for this organization for so long, with an astonishing 45 people on the Climate Solutions Caucus when last Congress ended. And I remember, Mr. Corbello, you talking about some of the goals you had for the caucus. One, getting Republicans and Democrats to talk to each other. That happened. Two, fending off bad legislation. That happened. Three, introducing and ultimately passing good legislation. And we got good legislation introduced. So congratulations on just astounding success with that and the incredible leadership you've shown on this issue. So I'm going to turn things over to Flannery Winchester, who has a series of questions for Mr. Corbello, and then hopefully we'll be able to open up to the chat, depending on how that goes. So Flannery, handing things off to you now.
Thanks, Mark. Hi, everyone. As Mark said, I'm Flannery Winchester. I'm on CCL's communications team. So, Mr. Corbello, thank you again for being with us today. First, can you just tell us a little bit about what you're up to these days?
Well, thank you all for this opportunity. The Bipartisan Climate Solutions Caucus was mentioned earlier, and that caucus would not have been possible without CCL and all of the volunteers all over the United States and also throughout the world. So I'm very grateful. And yes, we did get 90 members of Congress, evenly split, 45 Republicans and Democrats, to join the caucus. We established the first healthy dialogue on climate policy in decades in the House of Representatives. And the caucus also proved to be a force to be reckoned with on the House floor. And certainly my hope is that for those who remain in Congress in this 116th Congress, that they can convert the caucus into an ideas factory for sound climate policy. That will only be possible with your activism and with your engagement. I've been enjoying the private sector, private life a little bit. I do miss Congress somewhat, but I've been happy spending more time at home doing work in the private sector, but also staying involved on the issues that I am passionate about. And of course, one of them being climate change and climate policy. So I'm thrilled to be a fellow at Columbia's Center on Global Energy Policy, where wonderful academic work is being done to support policymakers who want to legislate in this space. I also completed a fellowship at Harvard just a couple weeks ago, and staying active through other organizations like the Alliance for Market Solutions that are trying to make a difference in this space. And of course, very happy to keep in touch with CCL and to so many friends that I made throughout the country thanks to this organization.
Wonderful. Well, we definitely thank you for your ongoing work in this space. And let's talk a little bit more about the impact that the Climate Solutions Caucus had on Congress and on the political landscape around climate change. So I know on staff, we've noticed that people who deny climate change or don't acknowledge the science, they're really not being called to testify in congressional hearings these days. And surely that's at least partially attributable to the Climate Solutions Caucus. So we'd love to know, do you agree with that? And are there other impacts that you see from the group?
No question. I know it's hard to note progress in Congress because it's an institution that usually changes very gradually until there's a crisis and then it moves rather quickly. But we have seen a dramatic shift in the debate over the last few weeks. And of course, a big part of that is attributable to our joint work on this issue over the course of the last few years. When it comes to climate change and environmental policy, the debate these days is not about whether or not this is a real phenomenon or people questioning the science. The debate is over solutions. And you have Republicans, leading Republicans, making the case unapologetically that climate change is real, that it's a challenge that must be addressed, cannot be ignored, and that the discussion between Republicans and Democrats should be about what the best solutions for climate change are. I know that doesn't sound like a big deal, but considering where we came from, considering the fact that when I arrived in Congress in 2015, there were maybe three or four Republicans in the House who were even willing to use the term climate change, this is a drastic improvement. We are closer than we've ever been to the type of solution that our country and that the world needs to address carbon pollution. So it's very exciting. Some news was made yesterday with regards to congressional testimony and hearings. But you're absolutely right that all of the witnesses being called to these hearings, including the witnesses being called by Republicans, are not questioning the science that spells out and clearly explains the risks associated with carbon pollution. The debate, again, is about how we fix this, how we address it. And that is just a wonderful development.
Great. So one thing that our volunteers and staff I know are eager to do is to bring more Republicans onto the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act. And in just a few weeks, we'll be meeting with almost every House office to discuss the bill. So we'd love to hear what are your recommendations on how we can best get more Republicans onto the bill?
Well, you have to keep doing what this organization has done for quite some time now, which is making your presence felt. I've seen CCL storm the Hill before, and it's impressive. It can be intimidating in a good way. That's the answer, to keep showing up to these Republican offices, to thank them for those members who are really making the case that Republicans have to deliver solutions in this space, and to ask them to consider this legislation as a conservative market-based solution that does not grow government. That is the case that has to be made. Republicans have to understand that this is a conservative solution, and it happens to be the most effective and efficient solution as well, to recognize an externality in the economy, something that is causing damage yet is unaccounted for in our economy, something that can replace arbitrary regulation and give businesses and American families more certainty and more opportunity in the future. So that's the case that has to be made. It's going to take a little time, because Republicans are in a better place, because they are looking for these solutions, but they're also, I think, going to take a few months at least to learn about all the different solutions and to figure out where they have to go. They know that they have to go to a better place than where we've been for many years now, but where exactly that is, I think many of them are trying to figure that out. And of course, CCL's volunteers can be very helpful in that process.
Certainly. So I'm curious, have you stayed in touch with any of your former colleagues in Congress? And if so, what are they saying about legislation dealing with climate change?
So I have a one-year ban on communicating with former colleagues on policy issues, but I have been in settings where I've heard many of them speak and express, you know, their thoughts. And I've heard leading Republicans say that if Republicans ever want to return to the majority, they have to deliver a good solution for climate change. I've heard many Republicans express a desire to lead in this space, to become protagonists, where before most Republicans just wanted to avoid the issue. Not that they were deniers. There are very few Republicans in Congress who actually deny the science behind climate change. But avoidance used to be the strategy of preference. That has completely changed. Republicans want to engage. They want to deliver solutions. And that's just, again, extremely encouraging.
Absolutely. I know everyone here on this call hearing you say that is encouraged. So the bill, the Energy Innovation Act, has been referred to the Energy and Commerce Committee, the Ways and Means Committee, and the Foreign Affairs Committee. And the Energy and Commerce Committee has actually sent the bill to an energy subcommittee. So in your opinion, where do you think we should focus our attention to help get the bill moving?
Well, I think those two committees, Energy and Commerce and Ways and Means, are the most important, right? Those are among the top three committees in the House, with Appropriations being the other one. They're very powerful in the case of Energy and Commerce and Ways and Means. Republicans have effective, thoughtful, open-minded leaders in Greg Walden and Kevin Brady, good friends of mine. I know them both very well, and I have great respect for them. I think both of those ranking members are in a good posture with regards to this issue. They want to deliver conservative market-based solutions. So it's a good opportunity to engage with them. But I'll also say we have to hold Republicans accountable, but we also have to hold Democrats accountable. There are some Democrats who are not interested in finding a healthy compromise on this issue. There are some Democrats who willfully ignore the fact that if we're going to get a meaningful climate solution, it must be bipartisan, especially if it's going to be a durable solution. So while the room for growth is among Republicans for sure, I think that it's just as critical for organizations like CCL and others to engage Democrats and to hold them accountable and to let them know that the all or nothing approach always yields nothing, and that that's not an option when it comes to addressing climate change, given that we have limited time. So Republican outreach is critical. I think it should certainly be a priority. But as we've seen in the news from recent days, it's important for Democrats to be held accountable as well.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for sharing your perspective with us on all of that. We have some questions in the chat, I believe, that Ricky, our IT director, is going to comb through and read out for us. Ricky, do you have some questions?
Yeah, I got a few coming in. Thanks, everyone, for your questions. We'll try to get to as many as we can, but probably not all of them. But the first question, sort of the general theme, in the context of climate solutions, can you speak to the impact of the Climate Leadership Council, or really just like prominent conservatives in general, and their influence on Republican lawmakers?
So every factor influencing this discussion, this debate over climate policy, is pushing in the right direction. And the Climate Leadership Council has been effective at bringing on board major oil companies, for example, like Exxon and ConocoPhillips and other major U.S. corporations to make the case for a price on carbon. And certainly that makes a difference with Republican lawmakers, because these are companies that have the ear of House and Senate Republicans. And the fact that they are openly and undeniably advocating for these types of policy solutions really brings us closer to that point where Republicans and Democrats can find a healthy compromise that may not solve the entirety of the problem immediately, but will certainly get us closer to net zero emissions, which is what we all dream of and hope for. So CLC is important. I've been involved recently in efforts to strengthen the entire right of center climate field, all the organizations that are trying to make a difference in this space. For many years, a lot of the major funding from philanthropists and foundations has gone to left of center organizations. And of course, there are very important organizations in that space that certainly are trying to make contributions to this cause. But the funding gap between left of center and right of center organizations is massive. It's really an abyss. And as long as that's the case, that's going to make it harder for us to get meaningful policy enacted. So I applaud CLC. I applaud the Alliance for Market Solutions, Republic EN, all of the organizations on the right that are trying to make a difference, because again, that's where there's the most room for growth. That's where we need to get more votes in order to get a majority in the House, 60 in the Senate, and a president to sign meaningful legislation.
Great. Another question we've got from our friends in the Cornhusker state. They said, and this really kind of gets to the heart of CCL's philosophy as well. And so maybe you can speak to it from your days in Congress. But they said, their question is, one thing we've heard is that constituents, what we can really help the most do by is creating an environment among fellow constituents that make it okay for our legislators to really speak comfortably about climate change action and when they might not otherwise, because they're worried about getting pushback. Is that true? we talk about it all the time. How valid is that statement? And then, how did it impact your willingness to speak about it, that other folks and constituents were trying to make it something to give you, as I guess what Senator Whitehouse had termed one time, like safe harbor, right? To make it feel like you could actually come out and speak about this.
Well, think about it. Most Republicans, when they hear from constituents or people from all over the country, because when you're in Congress, you get calls from, I represented Florida and I got calls from Washington State. Most of the calls and the messages that Republicans hear are negative messages, people insulting them, people criticizing them. And of course, everyone, especially in politics, should be open to being criticized. But if we're trying to convince people, if we want people to follow us, we should probably take a different approach other than yelling and insulting. So it is important for Republicans to hear from constituents who are, all across the political spectrum, liberal, centrist, conservative, independent, whatever it is, people saying, look, we may not agree on every issue, but we really want you to be a part of solving this. This is not, about, our philosophies on government or about any other issue. It's about making sure that future generations can continue living on this earth and enjoying this earth in the same manner we have. It's about delivering a healthy planet. So those types of messages where Republicans are encouraged, where they get positive reinforcement when they make a strong statement or when they take bold action, that's necessary. And I can tell you that that doesn't always happen. I, as you all know, dedicated a lot of time and resources to this cause while I was in Congress. Yet some environmental groups criticized me and attacked me and opposed my reelection. So one can understand why some Republicans might be a little apprehensive about leading on this issue, and that reminds us how important it is for us to be a positive force and to try to win this cause by convincing people rather than diminishing them.
Great. Another question that came in was, what did you learn from your experience, you know, forming and co-chairing the Climate Solutions Caucus? What personal takeaways do you have from that experience?
Well, the first thing I realized was that so much time had been wasted. As soon as we got a group of Republicans and Democrats together in the room, particularly when there were no cameras around, people engaged in a very productive and meaningful way. And I think that's why I think we're a lot closer to a solution than most people would guess. And certainly there are roadblocks and challenges ahead of us, but people in American politics don't have conversations anymore, or it's rare. And when you create an environment where those conversations can happen and where people can understand each other and learn from each other, it makes all the difference. The Noah's Ark rule that we used to establish the caucus, where you could only join if you joined with someone from the other party, was so helpful. It caused hundreds of conversations between Democrats and Republicans, usually Democrats recruiting Republicans, and members got to know each other and got to understand why this issue was important to their colleagues and why it might also be important to them. So, you know, human relations, that's something that we've lost in our politics, and it's one of the reasons our politics have deteriorated so much over recent years. So, I learned, or I was reminded of a lot of the things that I was taught as a child from my family, to try to bring people together, to explain your point of view, to respect those who disagree and try to convince them instead of disqualifying them or diminishing them. This is the work of the caucus, and it sounds basic, but I think we need a lot more of that in Congress if we're going to address this issue and others that pose a threat to our future.
Great. Flannery, do we have time for one more question?
Sure, one more.
Okay. Last question, and maybe this is more like civics. You can help us understand what we could be doing within Congress. So now that the bill has been referred to a number of committees, what other strategies or things could we be doing, you know, that now that it's sort of in this committee phase, that might be different than our what we have done in the past, which is going to meet with our members of Congress one-on-one. But now that the bill's in committee, are there other things that we could be doing outside of contacting those committee members to move things forward?
Well, I think you should follow the path of how a bill becomes a law. And I think probably the most valuable thing that could happen in the near future is for one of these committee chairmen to host a hearing specifically to discuss this bill, or perhaps this bill and other bills that other members have filed, in order to grow momentum for this kind of legislation. Of course, there will probably be a hearing on at the Ways and Means Committee on Wednesday of this week, but the topic there seemed to be very broad. I would ask a committee chairman like Richie Neal and Frank Pallone to hold hearings or at least roundtables on specific pieces of legislation and have experts come in and testify and discuss the all the different features of the legislation and how it addresses not only the challenge of climate change, but other components of the bill, like, for example, a dividend component, the border adjustment tax. I think that would be a healthy next step.
Wonderful. Thank you, everybody, for your questions. I'm sorry we couldn't get to all of them. And thank you again for your time and for your thoughts today, Mr. Carbello. We really, really appreciate you speaking with us.
Always count on me. Thank you.
Awesome. And you're welcome to stay on for the remainder of the call. We'll be sharing some reports from the field now, but we also understand that you're very busy. And if you need to drop off, that's perfectly fine.
I have to go pick up my daughter. So we'll keep in touch. You all have a great day.
Thank you so much. So everyone, April was a huge month out in the field. You all put up some really, really incredible numbers. First of all, you held 386 in-district lobby meetings. Compare that to 195 last year. So you very nearly doubled your in-district lobby numbers. You had 67 op-eds published in April. That is the most ever in a single month. And you've held 1,818 outreach events so far this year. Last year in the same period, there were 1,535 outreach events. So you've really, really ramped things up. Great job, everyone. We've also seen some key endorsements come in since last month. Alex Honnold is a rock climber who starred in the Oscar-winning documentary Free Solo. He has endorsed the bill. Big shout out to Bill Barron and Matt Tucker, who lead the Outdoor Industry Action Team and worked to make that endorsement video a reality. There have also been municipal endorsements rolling in from around the country. Anchorage, Alaska, Durham, North Carolina, Rochester, New York, Richmond, California, Coconut Creek, Florida, Pittsford, New York, Truckee, California, Bemidji, Minnesota, Bayfield County, Wisconsin, and Del Mar, California. And just this week, Cincinnati, Ohio passed a municipal resolution in support of the Energy Innovation Act specifically. So with a population of over 300,000, Cincinnati is the largest municipality to have endorsed the bill to date. And some late breaking news here, the Miami Beach Chamber of Commerce just endorsed the Energy Innovation Act. So this is the first Chamber of Commerce that we know of to have endorsed the bill. So that's huge. And great job to everyone who worked on all of those endorsements. And none of this would be happening if you all weren't out there in your communities talking about climate solutions. So last month, we asked you to share your outreach photos on social media using the hashtag #GrassrootsClimate. And you sure did. We saw posts all over social media of your tabling efforts, your lobby meetings, and your chapter meetings. So we took all of those images and we compiled some of them into a short video for Facebook. So Ricky is going to fire that up now so that we can all watch it. Ricky, are we all set with the video? Awesome. So that video is available for you guys to share on Facebook. And shout out to CCL's marketing department and intern who helped assemble that great video. And then on Twitter, we pulled your photos together into a Twitter moment. So Ricky, can you show the slide? You can see just a few snippets of those tweets here. If you go to @CitizensClimate on Twitter, you can see the full moment. And on Instagram, folks posted lots of Instagram stories from their outreach events. There are photos from Kentucky, Nebraska, Illinois, really all over. So you guys can check those out by going to @CitizensClimate on Instagram. So the actions this month for US and Canada. In Canada, we are asking folks to support the Green Pact by hosting an October 7th environmental town hall, and also to connect local municipal climate champions with the Canadian Climate Leadership Caucus. And then in the US, the actions are on your action sheet. First, we're asking you to create lobby meeting plans to share with your liaisons. Second, to go ahead and mark your calendar and plan to call your member of Congress on June 5th, which is Call Congress Day. Third, we want you to kind of tune up your talking points and have some practice with our new study guide, which is some of the resources we think will be most helpful to you as you prepare to lobby. And then last but not least, a preview of the June action, which is to tweet your members of Congress on June 11th. So we've got a few super short training videos available for you to help get you up to speed on Twitter and to help you with that action. So as Mark said, next month we will host the call from the Omni Shoreham Hotel in DC, where we'll be at the 2019 conference. Our guest speaker for next month will be the economist Xiling Su, who's also on CSAIL's advisory board. So we will see you all in DC next month. And now Ricky will unmute everyone's lines so that we can say goodbye. Thanks again for all your hard work this month.
Yeah, and everybody, if you could please give a shout out to Flannery and Ricky, that was fantastic.
Thank you.
We're unmuted.
Many groups are watching?
Howdy from Iowa. They can see us if I ask.
You put wet stuff in the veggies to go in here.
Mark's group? Yeah. We said
I just have to.
No, it's good. I want to tell you guys.
And then on that Tuesday, you send a tweet, you know, they'll get 20, 50 tweets, and they'll go, wow,
this is a